Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. Today, we'll take four virtual road trips to places where there are exciting new developments in spite of COVID-19 and the derecho. First stop, Main Street, Nevada.
My name is Henry Corbin, and I am currently the Main Street Director here in Nevada, but I do have ties with KHOI. It would have been my sophomore year of college. I actually interned there for almost a year and learned a lot at that. The skills I learned there really had an impact on my career, so I have a lot of good memories there.
Well, we certainly have good memories of you and are so happy that we'll be able to go to you for information about Nevada, and there's a lot to talk about.
There is. You know, we've had a lot of great news, especially in the last 2 weeks. We've had amazing news, but, you know, there's a lot happening down here and a lot of good things.
Well, our story for this week is the good things that are happening during COVID-19 still and after the derecho. And, of course, you've been hit by both somewhat, but you also had street improvements during this period.
We did. So we actually went through the largest infrastructure project in community history. And for people who are familiar with our downtown is set up kind of in a four-block-long area on 6th Street, which is our main street. And this infrastructure project this year covered three blocks. And those three blocks are probably the oldest area of our downtown business district. And so it included utilities, sewer, drainage, storm sewer, and then an actual new street itself. And so that project started in March and has just completed the first phase. They have another bit of work left north of Lincoln Way, but have all new water connections to all the buildings, new sewer, and then visually we have a new street, sidewalks, and lights. So it gave us a fresh and clean new slate to work on.
Yes, and of course, for the businesses, it was, I guess, pretty devastating anyway because of COVID, but they have adapted very well also. So there are a lot of new, exciting things happening in the businesses themselves.
Yes, we've been pretty fortunate. We have amazing business and building owners down here, and over the last few months, they've really pulled together as a group, and their ideas have gotten creative. They have supported their neighbors. We've just seen an amazing energy and passion down here, and so, of course, we kind of had the trifecta of issues this year between the street project, COVID, and the derecho. And so, but really the fact that all three of those issues all happened on top of each other in a way limited their impact. While it was still severe, a lot of the business owners tend to say, well, at least they happened all at once and it wasn't one after another. And so we consider ourselves fortunate and we're still persevering and pushing forward. Having the street aspect of that out of the way has really helped. And we've seen a really sudden and very rapid uptick in business since the street reopened. Our downtown, what's interesting is on the north side, we have our town's city hall. But on the south side of Main Street, we have, it's the county administration building. A lot of people will know it as the old courthouse. And so that's where a lot of the business activities and everything like that for the county take place. And so that was a big factor, especially with this project, the street project concluding, was access to that building for individuals voting, taking care of licenses, and various other business-related things. So really the timeline worked out perfectly for that.
Just in time for early voting.
It did. We were all a little concerned because really, I mean, this is a very busy season for them in that building, you know, with students coming back from Iowa State and licensing for vehicles and voting. And so I think they're very happy in that building that everyone can get to their building very easily right now. So I think we lucked out timeline there.
Well, since this is a virtual tour, I should admit that I got a little preview by going to your Facebook page. I think during the construction, you had regular updates on what was going on Main Street. But even now, you can look and see what a torn up Main Street looked like and then what it looks like now.
Yes, that was something we really wanted to make sure that we were communicating to both the businesses and the individuals coming to downtown, what it looked like and how they could navigate it. Because there for a while, for about a 3-month window, we pretty much had a dirt street and tumbleweeds included at one point. So we all thought that was entertaining. But communication is the biggest thing. And that's really, as an organization, our biggest goal is communicating to businesses and the people coming down here. And so during construction, we had a lot of fun doing it just because every day was something new down here.
From your Facebook page, I do know that you have a bakery and there are lots of reviews. That was a very, very popular business. Is that a new business?
It is. So what's actually interesting about that was when we became a Main Street, probably the second week we were a Main Street community last year, we did a survey to see what the community wanted, what they thought we needed, and bakery came up on almost every single list. And so the owners of this establishment that just opened up, Bricktown Bakery, it's Mike and Paula Feltner. And they have the photography studio here in town, too, and are actually from Ames before here. And so they saw that input. And Paula has always had a passion for donuts and trying to make the best ones. And so it really came about through that. And they had their grand opening. It would have been last Saturday. And it was the most enjoyable, chaotic, fun event we've done in a while. Because people were actually lined up at 6:30 a.m. to come in and get donuts. And I think they had sold out of almost everything they had by probably about 1 o'clock. And they had actually dipped into all their raw materials and everything to keep up with the pace. So it was quite the event. They have a very good product, and it's a wonderful environment. They've actually been renovating the building that this bakery is in, and they've done a fabulous job on that space. And so we're very excited for what the future holds with them.
There are a couple of other businesses that I know about from reading. There are a couple of restaurants, actually La Casita. I know from eating there back before you became a Main Street. I mean, before you got Main Street designation. Why don't you talk a little about Main Street designation? Because that's quite new for New York.
It is. So the Main Street designation was something we received a year ago, and that puts us into a program that's run through Iowa Economic Development. And there's 54 throughout the state, and Ames is one also. But it's a program to really help energize and bring life back to downtowns and really help the businesses that are there and help bring new ones to them. So that's a huge factor. And we've been very lucky with the businesses that have been here for decades and decades, like Mi Casita is a prime example. They are a fan favorite in this community, and they have been supportive of us since day one, and really they want this downtown and this community to be an amazing thing that we all have a goal for, because we're lucky as it is. It's an amazing community right now, and we're growing, and we're making sure that we're growing in a way that we all can celebrate and enjoy together.
Mi Casita also has a prime location for Main Street.
They do. They're right in the heart of the district. So they're actually almost the exact center of our Main Street district. And so right across the street from the theater, just centrally located, their space is a really inviting space. You walk in and immediately you notice the tin ceilings up above. And, they were probably one of the earliest ones to really show off that original tin ceiling and kind of the large openness of these spaces. And so it's a fun environment, and they're amazing people. They are just so important to this community, and they really cherish this community. So we're very lucky to have them. I guess we have the two Mexican restaurants. So we have Mi Casita, right central, and then we have El Mescalito, which is right on the corner there, and really by City Hall has a good presence there. They're great people too. They're really fun to communicate, just talk with and see how things are going. And of course, where they're located, that corner sees a lot of action. So El Mescalito has, they see a lot too. But we're very fortunate with those two restaurants. We also have Snack Time, which is our fan favorite down here. Eddie, who's the owner of that, for a little while due to COVID and the street project closed down. And while he was closed, he did a lot of renovations on the exterior of the building, work on the interior, and he has done a lot of work trying to make it as COVID era safe as he can. And so we're pretty proud of that. He opened up right after the street opened, and since then it looks like business has been pretty good. My office looks right across the street to his, so I always enjoy seeing all the people coming and going and smelling the amazing breakfast food every morning.
The other one is Farm Grounds. And before you describe the restaurant part of that, I would like to mention that, but they have regular coffees with candidates. Which Pat Schlarbaum, our reporter, has been recording. We may be able to get those up on our website when we've edited them. They're pretty complicated because there are a lot of people talking. Would you like to describe Farm Grounds a little?
Yeah, so I guess tying on the coffee with the candidates too, that has been just a fun event to experience. And that's something I know Farm Grounds really enjoys helping put house. And so Farm Grounds is located right in the center of our district, right by State Bank across the street and next door to Ben Franklin. And it's a warm, inviting community coffee shop. You can get sandwiches there, some good breakfast food, burritos, but also it's just a nice place to network, grab a cup of coffee, talk with your friends. So the owner of Farm Grounds, Evie, also owns Gatherings, which is our event venue downtown. And with COVID in mind, they have opened that space up so individuals can socially distance, but also have a place to sit down and have that coffee, read the newspaper, give them a little bit of normalcy with everything happening right now. And so it's just a nice environment. Evie's done some amazing work over there, and she'll be doing a lot more amazing work. She actually just received a grant through the Main Street program to renovate her entire upstairs of the Gathering building and create a co-working space, conference room, studio, which will partly be used by a local yoga company and holistic company. But really, the co-working space is what we're all excited about. It's an area we've realized in this COVID era we need as a community. And so that project will completely renovate the upstairs of that building, and it's 5,000 square feet, so it's quite a large project. So we're extremely grateful to have gotten that grant, but we're excited for the project it'll allow us to do. We're constantly growing and really trying to help continue to evolve and invest in this downtown.
I can't talk about Main Street, Nevada, without mentioning the location KHOI has covered the most, the Talent Factory. Yeah, and for those who haven't heard our coverage of it, yeah, it's a very interesting theater. It was the old Camelot. I think originally it was vaudeville, and
Yes.
then it became a movie theater. And when the big conversion took place several years ago, and to be you had to buy a very expensive new projectors to get front first run movies, they chose not to do that.
Yes, so we've been pretty lucky. Over the last month or month or two, we've been working with Larry, and with less shows, he's been able to give us tours. And of course, growing up in this community, I remember going to the theater when it was still a movie theater, and really not knowing a whole lot on it, but diving into it with Larry, and then on the history side, which is something I'm so passionate about. That theater has had many iterations, starting out aimed at vaudeville and live shows and a little bit of movies, and then of course transitioning to just movies. And now we've seen the full circle. It's come back to live in-person shows, of musical acts and different entertainment. And so it's been interesting to see that theater make a full circle on itself and see how that really see how that interacts and compares with other historic theaters around us. We encourage people to come down here and really just take in the sights. You can spend an afternoon here and grab lunch and shop at our stores and take it in, and then maybe catch a show at the theater and get dinner here. And so, you know, we're constantly growing and constantly investing and trying to become a community that really, really draws in people. And so we recommend that you come over here and give Nevada a try.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we are on a virtual tour of Central Iowa, stopping to see new developments during this crisis time of COVID-19 and the recovery from the derecho. First stop was Nevada Main Street, where Henry Corbin was our tour guide. From there, we're on our way to Story City, where we'll visit a new business occupying a portion of the former outlet mall.
I am Jackson Kimley, the founder and president of Midland Company. So we're establishing in Story City a fresh shrimp production facility that gives folks an opportunity to get fresh seafood here in the Midwest, which is very rare, and use a proprietary technology that we've developed that uses algae to treat the water and really provides us the ability to bring seafood to the Midwest.
How did you get the idea?
I've been involved in trying to bring land-based aquaculture to Iowa for some time and had been familiar with some work happening in algae to treat water and just was fascinated with the concept of taking some of those results to aquaculture. Took me a while to pull the trigger, and we essentially worked on kind of proving it out and learning how we could build an effective shrimp production system that used algae to be able to treat that water.
It said that you developed this while you were at Iowa State. Is there some kind of entrepreneurial help that you're getting there?
Yeah, so we've worked with the Papa John Centers at Iowa State University, the Small Business Development Centers, the Agricultural Entrepreneurship Initiative. We've really received a lot of help from all of them. Iowa State University's startup ecosystem really is a big resource for entrepreneurs and anybody who's working to start a business, especially in agricultural technologies. It's really a strong suit for Iowa State, and there's a lot of resources that I think, at least for us, it would be hard to be successful without.
Do you grow your own algae? Where do you get the algae?
Yeah, so we actually use native strains of algae from Iowa and grow them in a controlled environment. So the beauty of algae when it's treating water for seafood is that it's a symbiotic relationship. So shrimp, for what we're producing, excrete nitrogen, phosphorus, and CO2, which is all the building blocks of what algae needs. So algae is actually able to absorb those nutrients, and then to add oxygen back to the water, and really provides a symbiotic relationship. That way you can actually remove the nitrogen and phosphorus into that algae cell and be able to capture it without that waste going into the environment.
And where do you get your shrimp?
Yeah, so we currently source our, I'll call them baby shrimp. They come in when they are so small you can barely see them. And then they come out of Florida and Texas is the two locations we get them. They spend the first month of their lives in a nursery, and they grow till they're all the way up to 1 gram in size. From there, we move them to our grow out system, and they grow to harvest size from 1 gram. That's about 25 or so grams for each shrimp. For folks who don't know grams, that'd be around 15 to 20 count for shrimp in a pound.
How did you come up with Story City as a place you were going to put your facility?
Yeah, so we looked around a number of spots in central Iowa We wanted to be close to Iowa State University for our location and be able to hold on to that relationship. That's very beneficial. And we were familiar with Story City from conversations with one of our investors who's an agriculturalist in Story City. And it was a friendly business environment and had a space that was open that fit our needs. So it was a good relationship in a business-friendly spot and made a lot of sense.
And what's your market for these shrimp?
Yeah, so currently we're selling, and the majority of our orders, we've actually got a lot of folks who've signed up already, even though we're not, got a little ways to go till we're at harvest date. In early 2021. So a lot of our customers right now are direct to consumers. So folks are signing up for about 3 pounds on average. And, you know, folks love shrimp, but they can't find fresh shrimp. So we're really kind of filling that need. I expect over time we'll work our way into restaurants and retail, but starting out with mostly direct to consumer.
Conversation before we started, you mentioned your business model. What's the business model?
Yeah, so the state of Iowa has had a lot of success with contract grower production in the poultry and swine space. So we kind of want to take advantage of a business model that works quite well. It provides farmers the ability to diversify their operations, potentially have kids come home to the farm, and really creates a beneficial partnership between farmers and our facility. And then in addition to that, we've got a technology that can enable these facilities to be spread all over the state and to not discharge any wastewater, which is really the key to making that feasible. So in the end, we get to have a partnership with farmers where they can get fresh shrimp to consumers in the Midwest, diversify their operations, and have a facility that doesn't discharge into the environment. It actually captures all the nitrogen and phosphorus into an algae fertilizer product.
Well, of course, this old mall in Story City is kind of a unique, extra large building that is empty and just needing somebody to take it over. Are there many such places in Iowa?
Yeah, so in the right situation, I think kind of where you're going with this is there certainly are spots with underused previous retail or warehousing space. Those certainly are opportunities for future farmer partners that if we can reclaim old space and renovate it to what we need for shrimp farming, that certainly is an opportunity that can save cost and be a nice revitalization opportunity for those communities.
What kind of workforce do you need?
Yeah, so we currently have 4 employees at our facility. I expect we'll grow towards 10 in the next couple years. In addition, as I mentioned, the contract grower partnerships kind of provides labor opportunities all throughout the state, the folks who decide to partner. So we'll have all the folks in our business that are doing the nursery services, supplying these farms, doing the research and development to keep them competitive in our technology work. And that'll be a lot of where our labor force comes from. For us, you know, being able to bring fresh seafood production to the Midwest really is a huge opportunity for Iowa. The U.S. consumes billions and billions of dollars of seafood every year, and almost all of that is imported. We believe there's a pretty significant opportunity to produce sustainable local seafood here in the Midwest and in Iowa specifically. There's a huge market in the Midwest and the United States overall that's looking for local fresh seafood, and that's the need we're filling. Goodbye, Mama Shrimp. Papa, shake my hand. Here come the shrimp boat for to take me to Louisiana. Here come the shrimp boat for to take me to Louisiana. He showed his mama and papa shrimp newspaper he read. An invitation to love.
ride New Orleans, stay in Grand Hotel. Me Creole girl who had been come out of your shell. Me Creole girl who had been come out of your shell. If I should live to be 90, I will never forget the little strap and the song he sang as he jumped into the net. Goodbye, Mama Shrimp, Papa shake my hand. Here comes the shrimp board for to take me to the end. Here comes the shrimp board for.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host, Susan Franson, for a virtual tour of Central Iowa, stopping to see new developments during this crisis time of COVID-19 and recovery from the derecho. You just heard from Jackson Kimley, the founder of Midland Seafood, which is opening a new facility in Story City. Our next stop is not such a happy one. We're meeting Mark Schneider, director of the Arboretum, describing the efforts to clear away the destruction of the derecho and turn to restoring for the future. For many years, I've enjoyed going over to the Arboretum to check on my favorite trees, to see what flowers are blooming, or just to enjoy a nice, relaxing walk with a friend. So when I read about the derecho and how hard it had hit the Arboretum, I didn't know whether I wanted to see it the way it is now. So I called the director, Mark Schneider, to ask him to tell me what I could expect.
The Iowa Arboretum on August 10th had a big hit with the derecho storm coming through with over 140 mile an hour winds. It damaged over 200 trees. We've lost about 150 trees at this point, and maybe more as we go through the winter. And it was a sad day. It was a hard day because it's our business to grow trees, and it's our collection. And many people have planted trees and watched them grow over the years. And now they were gone. A lot of them were gone. So once we got past that period, we rolled up our sleeves, we meaning our wonderful volunteers and fantastic staff members, and we went to work. And part of that work was cleaning up the grounds, and that was a monumental mountain to climb, and we're still cleaning up for the grounds. We have four major piles of trees and debris, and we just have a lot of work to do on the main campus. Our trail system is totally closed. Trees there went down like a domino effect. And some of the trees even twisted, which was interesting because it was supposed to be a straight line windstorm. And some of our trees really twisted over when they fell. So what's next for us is that we have seen our community come together and contribute to our relief fund, which is allowing us to clean up the grounds, and they've made donations. And people can go to our website at www.iowaarboretum.org if you're interested in seeing more about the storm and learning more about the storm and what it did to the Arboretum, as well as if interested making a donation to help us with the cleanup effort. Also, our contributions can be directed towards our reliefing campaign, which is part of this and also part of what we'll be doing in the spring, where donations will be collected for replanting the Arboretum. So that's how we've kind of dealt with it. We're taking lemons and making lemonade. It's not an easy thing for us, but we are moving forward and understand that we'll plant trees that maybe we will not sit under, but maybe our future generations will. That is our role as stewards of the Iowa Arboretum.
Can you give a visual picture of what the Arboretum looks like now?
So as you walk around the Iowa Arboretum now, and we are open, we're open during the week from 9 to 4 and on the weekend from 10 to 4 during this month. We'll close on the weekends in, starting in November for our winter hours. But the Arboretum, as you walk around, you'll see tree trunks that have been cut, you know, full trees that have been cut down to the ground, and all that remains are tree trunks as you walk around. You'll see trees that are partially leaning. You'll see some trees that are uprooted and some trees that have just snapped and fallen over. You'll see large piles of debris that we've been collecting over the last 6 weeks or more. And you'll see facilities like our gazebos and some of our other things that have been damaged by the storm that need to be repaired. And that's on the main campus. The trails are closed, but I've walked the trails to see what damage we have, and most of them are blocked, at least the first trail or two that have a lot of debris and trees laying across our trail system. It's really devastating to see, you know, over 100-year-old trees that are just snapped off and laying on the ground. So those are hard. It's hard to see, but we know that we have to work on cleanup and replanting of our trail system, and hopefully we'll be able to do that over the next couple of years. It really sets us back because, you know, we're trying to move forward with our master plan, and now we're looking at what we can do to get the grounds clean so that we can go back to working on that great plan that we have for our future.
How old is the Arboretum itself?
The Iowa Arboretum was established in 1968, so we are 52 years old. And we were started by a group of volunteers and people that worked at Iowa State University and people in the trade as part of the Iowa State Horticultural Society. On their 100th anniversary in 1966, they decided they wanted an arboretum to serve all of Iowa. And in 1968, they bought land in Madrid, where the Iowa Arboretum is now, to start an arboretum. So now, 52 years later, we still have a great portion of what was planted remaining, but there's a lot of trees that were damaged from the derecho storm.
You mentioned 100-year-old trees. Were these in the arboretum itself or in the woodland trails?
Okay, so we lost 40 to 45-year-old trees that were planted on the main campus, and those are the oldest trees. There was a concolor fir that had a accession number of 70, which is the year, and 3, which means it was the third tree entered into our accession records, and that was destroyed by the storm. The older trees would be across the street. We have some really old oak trees that are in our oak savanna that's across the street from the main campus. And there were other trees that were destroyed from the storm.
Were there any areas in the arboretum that weren't hit by the derecho?
Well, surprisingly, none of the, you know, the prairies, the perennial gardens, you don't see that type of damage that you see to the trees. Basically because they don't have as much surface area as a tree would have, like our deciduous trees, trees that lose leaves every year and grow their leaves back on. Our Jacobson collection of conifers seem to hold up pretty well. They're smaller, more considered more dwarf-like conifers, and they seem to hold up pretty well. The medium deciduous trees, our nut trees, saw a lot of damage. And again, you know, when you look at our trees, most of our trees, the canopy comes down to the ground. Not like a park where the trees are pleached or trimmed up for safety reasons. Here at the Arboretum, we let the trees grow out and up and down, so many of them touch the ground. So when the storm came through with 140 mile an hour winds, it had a lot of surface and just snapped off trees or uprooted trees, or just broke the tops out of trees or branches out of trees. So that was kind of the result of deciduous trees that took really the brunt of the storm here at the Arboretum.
Normally you have events scheduled that don't have anything to do with trees, like pancake breakfast. I'd like to know what you have planned for the holidays. Are you still trying to do some of these things?
So this 2020 has been an interesting year for many people, and especially nonprofits. We do have a lot of events that are planned throughout the year, and we've had to change the way we do business, not only because of the storm, but also because of the pandemic. So most of our events have been canceled. We are having our Dad's Belgium Waffle event, which is December 5th from 9 to 11. And that's going to be a drive-through where people can drive through and pick up their waffles and help support the Arboretum. But because of COVID-19, we're trying not to bring people together. We just think it's wise, and it's good for the safety of our guests and also for the safety of our staff and volunteers.
In the spring, you offer events that have to do with flowers. Are you going to be doing any of that this year?
Yes, we are. One other side note is that we are having what we call a relief evergreen sale, where we're going to make evergreen decorations for the holidays that'll be for sale that'll go towards our relief effort in the spring. And that'll be also in the month of November through December 5th when you can pick it up. So people can place orders for that on our website. In the spring, we're planning on having our symposium. And we have Karen Chapman is supposed to be speaking about gardening at our symposium in April. Most of our other events, we are still canceling. We have a number of food events that we have during the January, February, and March, and we've canceled them, again, because of COVID-19 and not wanting to bring people together at this time. But hopefully, as we open back up again and as things get hopefully back to normal, we'll be scheduling events again in the spring or later spring. There are a lot of places that are dealing with many different issues relating to the pandemic. And for the Iowa Arboretum, we've dealt with that, and now we're dealing with the damage to the storm. But we have hope, and that's all you can say. You have to have hope and believe that even though this has been a really bad thing, that in the future we will be able to make it better and that we will be able to replant and make it the type of place that people want to come to and enjoy and connect with nature. Because that's one thing that we did see when we just had the pandemic. When we opened back up in May, our visitation rose by 39%. People want this type of activity, a place where they can come and get away from the day-to-day things and to relax and to, again, connect with nature and enjoy the benefits that come from experience of being outdoors.
Our last stop is the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Boone, which, after 130 years, is building a parish hall just in time to accommodate parishioners needing to maintain social distance during Mass. Deb Franzenberg is here with us to describe the evolution of the building and how it will enhance the life of the church.
Gather the people. Our church here is about 130 years old, and on this same piece of property also exists a parish office building. It used to be a convent, and it has been turned into parish offices. So it houses the priests, our associate pastor, and different office staff. We're doing some light remodeling to this current building to maintain the use of this building as well. In between this building and our church originally was located the priest's residence, the rectory. Several years ago, that was taken down and turned into a green space, hoping to at some point build a new parish hall. One might wonder, you know, why a church of this size? We have about 700 to 800 parishioners, might not have a parish hall. However, right across the street from our church sits our school. We have a PK preschool through 8th grade Catholic school. That building was erected in 1887. And due to the size of the school and the facilities within, we have been able to utilize our school for a lot of our church functions. Those have been held in the gymnasium, which can seat, you know, 400 to 500 people, or even in our school lunchroom for smaller venues. So typically in the past, we've utilized that space for funeral luncheons, our church bazaars, our Knights of Columbus fish fries, and different events like that. About 20 years ago, a lot of devoted parishioners felt that there was a great need for an adjoining parish hall. So that kind of started a long time ago about looking at what that would look like, how we would make that work, to have something actually adjoining to our parish building. As you can imagine, in inclement weather, and you're going to attend a funeral luncheon or something, and people have to walk outside, then we are offsetting. If it's in the middle of school year, we're interrupting perhaps things that are taking place in the gym or the lunchroom and having to shuffle people around. So this has been a long goal. We've had a devoted committee of people who've been put in multiple hours, long hours, about how to make this happen. When Father Hughes arrived, he's our current pastor. He arrived in 2018, and he has a great eye and insight into architecture and the aesthetics of a building and how to mold a new building into an older building to make it look like it flows naturally. And so we're very fortunate that he's been able to do that. So currently, now this green space between our convent building or our parish office building and our existing church, we have laid the groundwork and they started the building process. We dug the first piece of ground up at about April of this year. We are working with Story Construction and they have are expecting a very short timeline for this building to be finished, expecting it to be done here at the end of November or early December. Our new building will consist of a large parish hall seating at around 220 at round tables. It will also have a bride's room. So for any weddings that we'll have, now the bride can now get ready here on site and have kind of a soft area with furniture as she prepares and does, you know, can do that all here. There will also be another meeting room that will be able to be used for Bible studies, choir practice, religious ed classes, anything like that. We'll be allowed to be in that space as well. Our parish hall area does have a full service kitchen, which will come in handy for our many events that we host. If we, you know, we hold Knights of Columbus breakfast, and so those things will now be able to be held over here. Funeral luncheons will be able to be held over here, and it will allow us to have programs and offering meals and different things like that in just a different setting, allowing people to being in the same building instead of having to leave and cross the street. This new building is also handicap accessible. You'll be able to enter from the west side of the hall, and you'll be able to walk in, and then down toward the east end, there's a slight ramp that will take you into the existing church. The elevation wasn't as bad as what we were anticipating it was going to be. So it was nice that we could include a small gentle ramp and along with a set of stairs, allowing people to gain access to the existing church. The existing church is made of stone. It's Anamosa stone. And the new parish hall, we were able to incorporate some of that same stone to pull that feel all the way across. It also has along the south side, which is the side facing facing 12th Street, has a lot of open window space, allowing a lot of natural light into the building, which will be quite beautiful. It will also allow, there's a very wide hallway running along that south side of the new building, allowing for overflow, if needed, from our hall to be out in that area and to be able to receive all that sunshine and that open feel from the exterior windows. Two of those windows were removed from where the entrance of the new hall is entering the church. And those two windows are actually now being pulled out and installed into that entryway into that exists in the new hall. We have also purchased stained glass to go on the west side of the actual hall when you are inside the building. So that will give us some privacy from Story Street. But with that setting sun shining through that glass inside the hall, you know, for groups that are meeting in there, or if it's for a family gathering. Outside of the hall, between the hall and the existing church, just to the east of the hall, there will be a little small courtyard area with hopefully a meditation garden back in that area, allowing people to go out and have some quiet time amongst plants and flowers to be prayerful and do some reflection. You know, the reality is with COVID, everything is, hindering a lot of activities, in-person activities. We recently, and I don't know if you can use this or not, we recently just held a kind of a musical concert, for lack of a better word, with our musical liturgist and our associate pastor. They both share a great love of music, and our associate pastor has been composing music, and they, this past weekend, just held a little dueling piano contest, if you'll say that. And, you know, with social distancing, our church was full. You know, we weren't able to really accommodate any more people, allowing for that spacing needed. So after the event was over, you know, we had some conversations about what a great opportunity an event like this would be in our new hall. The intention is to possibly look at getting a baby grand piano to fill that space and how we could accommodate more people in that area and kind of inaugurate our new building all at one time. So there is some thought or some conversations about whether a little Christmas program could happen with our new building once it's open, kind of inaugurate the space at the same time as providing an opportunity for people, our parishioners, to come out and hear some lovely music by some of our own being considered, looked into to do that, to have that sound system go into the parish hall area, as well as the audio or the video. We will plan on having a projector screen, I believe, and a large screen TV. For exactly those reasons, you know, when you have an event where there's going to be more people, even in under normal circumstances, when you have an event that's going to have more people than normal, you know, when you need that overflow space, this would allow that space to be available for people to sit in an alternate room, hear the audio that's coming out of the church, see a video, and still feel like you're there at the same event. Yeah, COVID definitely presents a lot of challenges, right? Keeping the social distancing, allowing people to come and gather while maintaining all those limits that we're trying to be very careful with. So yeah, this will allow us to do that. And so we are very eager for when we'll be able to actually be in the building. Like I said, there's a great number of parishioners here that have been wanting this and hoping for this to come for so long that even up until we broke ground, some of them, you know, kind of teased us and said, well, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, and we would say, well, it's happening. It's happening. This is the year. So we understood their carefulness with, you know, wanting to be excited with it because it has been such a long drawn out process. You know, the building plans have been looked at before and we just have never been able to actually forge ahead with it. And so we're very fortunate to have Father Hughes here. He was an excellent pastor with, brought a lot of experience with buildings and design and the architecture behind it, how to make it all flow. And even though it will be a new building, if you drove by, you might think that it has been here for as long as the church, for 100 plus years, because it will blend in so seamlessly.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Today, we took a road trip through our area. We heard from Henry Corbin, Jackson Kimley, Mark Schneider, and Deb Franzenberg. Local Talk will be broadcast at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was produced by Susan Franson. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Main Street from the official Disneyland recording. Song of the Shrimp, written and performed by Elvis Presley. Gather the Spirit from Music of the Mass. Local Talk is a program by and for the community. If you have a story you'd like to hear covered, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878, or send us a press release at KHOI Radio. That's KHOIRADIO at gmail.com. If you would like to become a member of the KHOI family, go to our website, khoifm.org, and hit the yellow Donate Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Were you convicted of a felony? Would you like to vote in Iowa? Now you probably can. On August 5th, the law in Iowa changed. That means most Iowans convicted of a felony can now vote. As long as you've discharged your sentence, including probation, parole, supervised release, and special sentence. Find out more at youcanvoteiowa.org. That's youcanvoteiowa.org.